It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd. The only light we ever see is from our monitor.
They argue about comic books and internet connections. The biggest highlight of the year is the Star Trek convention.
Our turn wasn't big enough to sign up any stars. But we much better Richard, who was phased by a Borg.
Ben,
he knew Mr. Sulu.
What?
It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd.
Well, good day. Today is our Nerdcast episode number 36, and we're so glad you're able to join us, whether on video or audio. We've had a little bit of a hiatus over the holidays, but we're looking to re-engage at least once a month here, and then as we gain viewers, we'll increase our frequency again on this Nerdcast. Nerdcast really is a collaboration of a number of nerds that are on the Nerds On Site team somewhere in the world. We try to represent some of our countries that we operate in. And it really is designed for nerds and wannabe nerds. So if you're looking to see what Nerds On Site is all about and what it's like to be on our team, this is a place to check it out, where we talk about good news typically, and then we go through some of the recent news and also typically focus on a topic for the day. So again, thank you for joining us. You can also follow us at on blog that iwanttobeanerd.com, where we post these, and we'd love to hear your comments as well. And today we have six of us all together. Right beside me here is Mr. Arthur Weeb. Good to have you, Arthur.
Good to be here, yeah.
Arthur's a producer, so he does all the fancy post-editing, he and Nathan as well. John Harbarenko, Mr. Co-Founder Harbarenko. Good to have you, John. I think John is muted, or maybe his 3G is cutting into his Skype.
It might have been the first thing. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Chris Allen from the UK. Good to have you, Chris.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, David.
And Dennis Housenek from West Virginia. He's also our data center team leader and our security guru, who posts most of the security-related articles on our blog. Good to have you, Dennis.
Oh, it's good to be here. Good day, good evening to everyone. Good morning, wherever you are.
And last but not least, Nathan, I'm glad you could join us as well.
It's good to be here as well.
Nathan works closely with Arthur, and I forgot to say that Nathan, Arthur, John, and myself, we're from Canada. So we have Canada, UK, and the US represented here today. And all the flags are behind me. So glad you guys could join us today. We'll start with good news in the same order, if you guys are okay with that. And the reason we start with good news is very simple. It's very easy when you're, whether you're running your own business, whether you're talking about family life, no matter what aspect of life you're talking about, it's very easy to get dragged down by events. But when we purposely share the good things that happen, we actually attract to ourselves more good news. So, Arthur, you're first.
Yay! Well, I'm definitely excited about the March of Dimes tomorrow, GLM Bale. First event that we're broadcasting live for this group of people and this fundraising event. And so we're broadcasting each individual person in their jail cell live using Ustream, and also the live TV broadcast from that area over the internet. So that's exciting. That's going to go on Saturday.
It is very exciting. And the marchofdimesph.com, if you have a chance, please join us there. And please follow us on Twitter as well, because we're going to be promoting this event. And the cause is really good. It's to make healthy babies. So really, we're helping an event to raise funds. So Arthur, thanks so much for all the work that you've put into making this happen. David Everett, our star nerd of ours in Port Huron, Michigan, he and John Lasik were really the champions of working with March of Dimes to make this happen. So it's the first time that we're using social media, live webcasting, and all that kind of stuff to help a fundraiser. So we're very excited about it. Mr. Abrenko, good news.
Oh, good news, good news. Well, in the last week, I've been involved with three different nerds who have are working on national contracts. So that's not bad. So these are contacts that they've made, that they've explored and expanded, and can now set up a national contract. In one case, it's actually international, where they're using the team of nerds worldwide to help deliver. So that's very exciting.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Three in a week.
Yeah.
Amazing. I remember when this was once a year kind of thing.
Yep.
Mr. Allen, Mr. New Daddy, good to have you, Chris.
That is my good news, really. The best news I could probably have is I now have a healthy, happy baby boy.
Wow. Congratulations, hey, good Chris. Stuff. Life just became altogether different, didn't it?
Certainly did.
All of a sudden, it's about that little guy and not about you at all.
Yeah. It's great.
Excellent good news, Chris. Dennis, would you like to share some?
Yeah, you know, I guess I'll share this. I seem to have retained my rapport with female senior citizens. decades ago, actually, when I was in college, I taught swimming at a YMCA, and I had quite a following in my adult swim class. It was in the evenings of older women who had terrible fear of the water, and I always said to them, wow, you know, if you come here enough, I will be able to teach you how to swim. Now I have developing a bit of a following of older women who have an equal fear of computers, and I tell them, if you give me some time, we will be able to do this. I've had, you know, they sort of talk to each other, and so I've had several calls over the last couple of weeks from people wanting to come in and we come to their houses and just show them really simple things. And the other day I went to a neighbor, and I showed her, she had a webcam on her laptop, and she said, "Oh, really? Yeah." And she said, "Well, I looked at that once, but it didn't look very good." And I said, "Well, we have to pull the tape off." I still had the packing tape on, so we pulled that off of the lens. And she's like, "Oh, that's wonderful. I loaded Skype for her and said, look at this, you can have Skype video calls with your kids." She was just thrilled to death.
Wow. That's fantastic news, Dennis. So that kind of reminds me of, there was a Photoshopped iPad image yesterday that someone sent me. It had 300 webcams on it. and the headline at the bottom says, "Happy?" I thought that would be something that John Hamrenko would put together.
No, but I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, so many of us were so critical about the fact that it, you know, didn't have a webcam.
Did you see the post where somebody apparently on the inside has posted pictures? They've just got the new chassis in for the iPad, and they have a little hole in the top. And they took a MacBook Pro little EyeSight camera, and it fits perfectly. So
I haven't seen it. Well, that'll make some folks happy. That, and there seems to be a hint in the code of iPhone OS 4 to be working with a stylus, right? So revision 2 may have a webcam, revision 3 may have a webcam and a stylus capability. So that might be the case. Nathan, would you like to share some good news with us?
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually very excited to take part in this March of Dimes event this weekend as well. So this is going to be... it's going to be great, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely. Glad you can join us, Nathan. And anybody else who has not yet known about it, please, I left it here right on the screen behind on the webcast if you're looking at the video version. MarchOfDimesPH.com. PH stands for Port Huron. So MarchOfDimesPH.com is where you'll be able to watch this live along with the webcast and live webcast of what's happening with the local television channel. So there's a local television crew that will be reporting all day long, and we're grabbing that feed and rebroadcasting it over our .tv service. So it'll be right embedded into marchofdimesph.com. And also the prisoners, when they, if you end up getting a call from a prisoner for fundraising, you'll be able to watch them live on a webcam. So we'll have a bunch of webcams and the live feed going all at the same time, and tweeting and Facebooking and all that kind of stuff. So that'll be a lot of fun. And my good news for the week is that we have a very, very exciting new project where we're working with a Fortune 50 company within Canada to run a pilot. We did an experiment over a year ago to help them see the cost savings in converting to a Linux platform, and thereby saving a lot of money on licensing costs specifically. And that pilot, or that experiment from a year ago, has gained additional traction, and it is now a pilot where we're taking two key vendors and their hardware platform with this Linux infrastructure, and then comparing the two vendors, and then they will be selecting one of the two to be the finalist. And from there, we expect it to go to deployment right across the country. So it's a very exciting project, and we'll probably have a dozen or so nerds involved in this over the next 4 months to run the pilot successfully, thoroughly, and we're very, very excited to share that with our team. If you're a team member, you can get more details, and if you're a wannabe nerd, then join the team and we can share more with you. So that's my good news for the week, and we have a bunch of stories today we want to talk about. First of all, nobody can ignore the iPad launch from last week. I certainly am. I'm very thrilled, and I know it's just like with the iPhone. There's a lot of bashing out there, but what it didn't have, and it was very interesting to me that during the announcement that the share price actually dropped, and then once the price was announced, the shares went right back up past where they were at the beginning of the announcement. So there certainly seems to be overall some degree of excitement. But I was at my osteopath yesterday morning, and here's a doctor's office that has no technology. They run schedules on a manual basis and everything. And all I could think about is, what a perfect way to start going with technology for a personalized healthcare practitioner that has been technology averse to date, to start with something that's so easy to use, because I am sure if there isn't an app for that, my goodness, we're going to be having that app out that helps a health practitioner manage the simple day-to-day things, like just maintaining their own schedule and keeping a track of the personal appointments. I'm thinking about chiropractors' offices, osteopaths, registered massage therapists, all those kinds of folks that need this. But and I don't know, what do you guys think about the iPad?
I think it's I like it. You know, and I agree. I think that there's going to be some very specific uses for it. You know, I'm thinking of dispatch services, tow trucks. You know, we've got a client that, you know, they've got 150 to 200 trucks on the road. Imagine outfitting them all with one of these things in some sort of bulletproof, you know, casing that, you know, with a 10-hour battery life, they just grab it and go with their shift. And, you know, all of the calls that come in, they can be routed and mapped and GPSed. And I mean, you know, the other thing that I thought was really good was, you know, the what they went to, or what they got AT&T to do with the data plans.
Right.
You know, no commitment, and you know, as low as $14.99 a month and whatnot. But I will tell you, my kids, as soon as they saw it, they both started collecting things around the house and making a pile, and they came and said, "These are all the things we're selling. We're saving up for iPads." and I'm okay with that, because they're both avid readers. So this becomes, yeah, you know, if we're traveling, this is it for them. You know, they can read, they can play their game. Well, they're not big on games, but they might grab a couple games on this thing. You know, they can stay in touch with their friends on Gmail, and I mean, I think it'd be perfect for them.
John, actually, yeah, that's a really good point. I know you have a comment too, Dennis, to make, but just to follow up on the reading part, yesterday Charlie said that his biggest hope for the iPad is that it will bring reading back, because reading seems to have been a lost art in the modern generation, or we read things like headlines and the first paragraph or two and then lose things from there. Sorry, Dennis, you wanted to say something?
Well, no, I was going to say that I think some of the less than enthusiastic reviews have to do with the fact that all the people doing the reviewing are technological inclined people.
Exactly.
And this device is not aimed at them, and they were very disappointed. They thought, oh, this doesn't have that, doesn't have that. But this device is not for them. This device is for the people you're talking about, those who have been technologically averse because it just seemed too complicated. And, you know, John mentioned drivers. You know, UPS drivers have been carrying a proprietary device that does a lot of things for them. You know, it has GPS in it and does a lot of tracking and management for them. This gives us an opportunity to build custom apps for all kinds of people who wouldn't have the funds to invest in that kind of proprietary solution.
Right. And I bet you the UPS device is a whole lot more expensive than this, right? Because they're not going to be making them at the same volume as the iPad would be produced at.
Yeah. Right.
And people have been sort of hacking on the bevel, right? Saying, well, what a large bevel, how ugly. But that's where you put your sticky notes, right?
Yeah, right, because it still doesn't multitask. So if you want to be able to see some notes as you're doing something else, that's your only way, sticky notes. Good point.
Well, Tom, I imagine they'll come up with skins and all kinds of stuff that you can put around that bevel, yeah, right?
That's right.
To customize.
You'll need some kind of protection for it. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
So what are the price points? Because $499 definitely seems very cheap. But is that a realistic one to go for?
Oh, it
is. That doesn't have the 3G, though, in that one, does it?
No, correct. It doesn't. The high-end, the 64 gig version plus 3G is like $849. So it's almost twice the price.
$829, I think.
Still reasonable.
Yeah.
Really, it's certainly a lot less than I was expecting it to come out at.
Right. Right. Well, the pricing I have right on the screen here, $829, John is right. So that'll be the highest end. This is in U.S. dollars, of course, so the pricing will range. And interestingly enough, Chris, your country is going to get – your country looks to be like it's they're the next in line for the 3G model. So the 3G model is to be available by the end of March in the U.S. And by April in the U.K. So it almost looks like they've already made 3G carrier deals there. But who knows how long it'll take for the 3G models to become available in other parts of the world. So be interesting to see if it's going to be carrier locked, to see if you can buy one in the U.S. and then stick a SIM card in from another country and have it work if you have a data plan.
I thought they said in the presentation that they're going to be unlocked.
It's unlocked. Yeah, because they're unlocking the iPhone.
Thank you for that, guys. I missed that. If it's unlocked, then that's brilliant, because then you can buy one in the U.S., and have a data plan, in your country, and be able to use it there.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Actually, can I just add one more thing? New Apple patent is actually to use the bevel around it as a touch pad, like a touch area, but not a screen. So on the actual screen, you could have like a cell phone where it says touch here or touch there. It's actually be like buttons and all kinds of stuff. So it's still touch sensitive, but not a screen. So that might be something they add in the future as well.
So now they're starting to patent removal of features. So you remove the screen functionality, and that's now a patent. Okay, got it. Oh, man, the kinds of things that they have to patent is just crazy. All right, on to some other news here. Dennis, I think you were the one that submitted this one. Headline, report details, hacks targeting Google and others. Do you want to talk about this one a little bit?
Well, yeah, the interesting thing is that what this article is suggesting is that there may be a lot more of this going on than we are aware of. This is a very different kind of attack. You know, it's very much more stealthy, and it's not aimed at stealing financial information. It's aimed at corporate or international espionage.
Right.
And it just talks about, some U.S. defense contractors have been attacked, and this is just a sort of a window into, I think, that's something that we'll see a lot more about over the next year or two, and that is corporate and international espionage as being one of the purposes of malware.
Right, and it's very interesting too that Security Now, Steve Gibson talked last week about how Microsoft actually knew of this particular Internet Explorer vulnerability for quite some time, but really had no plans of actually solving it until there were a couple of governments that announced a recommendation to stop using Internet Explorer altogether, and then all of a sudden, a few days later, the fix was there. And so in the meantime, who knows how many companies had been compromised as a result of it already, and it caused a lot of trust with Microsoft to be lost, who had actually a pretty good track record of solving security issues pretty quickly, right? So this was a bit of a disappointment in how slowly they came to a solution.
Yeah, also a good reason to make sure that anyone you encounter who's still on IE6, get them off of it.
Right. And
or, just IE.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah.
Well, actually, I think it was last week or maybe the one before, the Security Now from the one before. Maybe it was I forget exactly which one it was. It may have been number 84, where he actually talks about the exact steps to go through if you just want to lock IE down, period. And it was very, very simple. You basically set your security zones to maximum, and then you just put in a couple of exceptions, like Windows Update, so that it can continue to function, and that's it. WindowsUpdate.com and Microsoft.com, and those are the only exceptions. And that way, even if you're using Outlook or Outlook Express, any of the IE vulnerabilities simply can't be executed because no script can be run. Anyway, those details are outlined step by step. Right here it is. Sure enough, Security Now, episode 232, and he talks about exactly how to set the trusted sites.
So, Steve, still happy using Firefox?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still using Firefox. However, one of the things, just as a quick side note, one of the things that John discovered last week was that if you're using Firefox on a Mac, then it actually consumes your battery life by about 10% faster. So I thought, okay, this is a keen observation. So let me just verify that. So I actually recorded my screen and verified it, and sure enough, and then I posted a YouTube video on that to show how I measured it. And sure enough, you're right, John. Using Firefox drains the battery 10% faster.
Yeah, interesting, eh? And have you tried the same with Safari, though? I mean, I wonder if it's just...
Oh, yeah, I did. I first did Firefox, and then I did Safari. And
I'd like to see that video for sure, yeah. Because, I mean, it's always just, something I noticed, but never really thought much of. I just figured, I must be the last guy to figure that out or something. But.
Yep, I posted under my account, so just youtube.com/DavidRedekop, and it's the first video right there. Unfortunately, the thing didn't properly scale. I exported it directly from ScreenFlow, and then it stretched it. So I think maybe that's something that the ScreenFlow 2.0.2 update was fixed. So hopefully that'll solve it.
It looks more like you're running FlatFox there.
Yes, FlatFox, that's good. Stubborn Trojan stashes install file in Windows Help. You know, I got to start reading the headlines very slowly because they're very complicated words. Is this a sign of the future? Because I've always had difficulty with English, and I thought for a while I was on a good roll, but I'm starting to not be so sure. Security researchers have spied malware that stashes a copy of itself in a Windows Help file to ensure victim computers remain infected. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, first of all, we should all have so much trouble with English, David. But
well, you know what? On that English note, real quick, you know what's actually disappointing to me, and all of us have to take note of this, is that English, correct English, both spoken and written, is also appearing to be becoming a lost art. And we're starting to accept false punctuation, bad usage of the apostrophe. Arg! Every time I see that, I just want to slap someone into a grammar school or grammar class. And we accept short forms, you know, of the texting generation. So we got to do what we can to, was it William Wilberforce? His wasn't an English comment. His was, we have two major problems. We have slavery and we have bad manners. And I would like to add a third one, bad English. Sorry. Go ahead. Talk about the Trojan.
This is, you know, I think we've probably all encountered from time to time those situations where, an infection, you clean up a malware infection and it just keeps coming back and you think, where is this thing hiding? Yeah. And I just came across this as an example of one piece of malware that hides it in plain sight, but hides it in the help files. And so, that's why I always tell people when you finish up malware, cleanup, always do a full scan and don't just rely on those quick scans because most of the products like Malwarebytes and others will do a quick scan and that finds most of the stuff you're looking for. But I always finish up with a full scan and it takes a long time. So you have to tell the client to be patient because this may take as much as a couple of hours to finish on a large hard drive. But you have to do that full scan because sometimes things are hidden in odd places.
So the idea, Dennis, is that in order to accelerate and have the client service call not be one that takes 3, 4, 5 hours, you do a quick scan, but then when you leave, you leave a full scan running.
Exactly. And then, and usually, you know, really what I like to do is I pin the client and come back and take a look at it. That's one of the great things about BombGuard. You can leave that running and you can come back and look at it later and then remove your access.
Right.
Short of that, you just tell the client, you know, this is going to do a full scan. When it finishes, just click this button that says, you know, anything it finds is bad, because malware bytes has a very, very low incidence of false positives. So I just tell people, whatever it finds, yeah, go ahead and get rid of it.
Ah, good idea. Good idea. All right. Another one here, Verizon MiFi device hacked. I know a lot of people depend on this. Journalists all over the country, right, depend on MiFi for their travels and remaining online. Mm-hmm. So the author here says, recently I picked up a Verizon MiFi device for $50 and the extension of my service contract for another 2 years. The fun I've had with the device so far has well made up for costs. So the MiFi talks about this and that. From a security perspective, it uses a pre-shared key, WPA, for authentication. It's unclear as to why the device doesn't use WPA2. Perhaps it's a security trade-off, et cetera, et cetera.
The real key point is here is that the default password is printed on the bottom of the device. However, his analysis suggests that the password doesn't contain as much entropy or randomness as we would hope. That some of that password is related to the manufacturer date of the device and the manufacturer. So, you know, it actually cuts down the number of characters in that password to something that's fairly hackable. So really it's fairly easy to mitigate. You just change the password. Don't use the default password that's printed on the bottom of the device, because it's not as random as you would hope or that you would think by just looking at it.
So you can log in and change it.
Yeah, apparently. Okay. I do not have one of these devices, but according to the article, you can change both the SSID and the password, and that's an easy way to mitigate this problem.
So it's not as bad as BT was over the they used WEP, and the MAC address itself was the, or something like that, was the password, right?
I signed my mother-in-law up for a Verizon account just a couple of weeks ago, and for $15, they said, well, we'll send you a wireless router. I said, okay, fine, for $15, let's have a wireless router. I was shocked, and I called them when I found out that the wireless router they sent only offered WEP security. All you could do was WEP. I called them, and I said, well, you know, charge $10 more and send something that's actually useful. Fortunately, I have another Verizon wireless router around that I was able to set up, but I was really surprised that in 2010, we're still sending out devices that only have WEP capability.
Right.
They could send you out a hub with that, too.
Yeah, really.
You know what's really a beef I really have with all of the consumer-grade routers, too, is that I have yet to find one consumer-grade router that we can use as a standard ship-out device for family-friendly net. And that's really what we're trying to do that without having to resort to a DDW or a T, you know, custom firmware. Mm-hmm. And all my requirements are very simple. Allow absolute exclusive DNS definitions, and now more and more of them seem to allow you to add additional DNS servers, but in its DHCP server settings, it retains the ISP provided ones. So you cannot give it OpenDNS exclusive DNS servers to consumer grade routers. It's really, really frustrating. So if anybody can help on that front, or if you're a listener or watcher of this show and you know of a consumer grade router that allows us to do that and block any other DNS query, that's what we need to do. And one of the things that's I like about Steve Gibson is he's really brought DNS security, DNS benchmarking to the foreground. But unfortunately, we're not going to get a whole lot of progress unless the techies of the world are going to run with it and make sure that customers are adequately protected. In utilizing that same approach of DNS, we can help families run a clean internet where only content that they deem appropriate with their own homes. We're not talking about ISPs doing this. We're talking about each family having control of everything that comes into their household. So that's why I'm a big believer in just a consumer-grade router that allows you to have absolute control over what DNS servers you use.
I don't want my ISP making that decision for me, correct. But I would like to be able to make it for my own household.
That's right. That's exactly what a point is. Yeah.
I still maintain that my method is best, where I just order the quarterly DNS report and I do my own manual lookups. Just type in the IP.
Mr. Technology himself there.
Is it time for web to abandon Flash? My answer, yes. Should we move on to the next article?
No. Yes. I don't think you're going to find anyone here to argue with that point.
Well, but although Adobe, I did read Adobe's response on their blog, and they did make some decent points to respond to Steve Jobs. I don't know. I'm sure Arthur has some comments on that too. But one of their comments was, okay, Steve Jobs, you keep on saying ours is buggy. Well, you can write your own. You do that for everything else. Flash is a standard that they publish. So Apple would have the flexibility to write their own Flash player if they wanted to, right?
HTML5 is close to being a standard. And right. I CPUs all over the world will take an extra breath if we can get HTML5 to replace Flash, because it's so much less CPU intensive.
Right, right. I noticed too that if you look at the battery life, again, John and I are very conscious of battery life on the laptops, because we're constantly someplace where it's not necessarily convenient to plug in.
And how long does yours last?
Oh, goodness. Normally. In actual usage?
Yeah.
The way I need to use my laptop day to day, I typically get 2.5 hours, and this is the 17-inch that's supposed to last 7.
All right.
So I did notice, however, on my last travel, I did have a very long flight from New York to Johannesburg. So that was almost 17 hours. And since I had no Bluetooth usage, no Wi-Fi usage, and I was at the lowest DIM level, and I was not doing any Flash, I was not using Firefox, obviously no browser, I was strictly handling email and looking at PDFs, I did get nearly 7 hours. So I was like, okay, so maybe that's how you are supposed to get it. But in actual day-to-day usage, if you're using a web, you guys know I'm on Skype all the time. I like to use the webcam as much as I can. It immediately, even if I have a full charge, the moment I turn on the webcam, it drops below 2 hours of expected remaining usage.
Well, you also use that USB powered heater and fan, don't you?
Oh, John. This is why you're on the show.
So helpful, aren't I?
So the answer is yes, it is time for the web to abandon Flash. Go to HTML5, because that way we'll have better battery life. Linux desktop or both? Linux, Windows, or both, doesn't matter when you're using a virtual desktop vendor of Ultio. Has anybody here tried it yet? Arthur, you made a comment, right?
Yeah, I looked into them. I haven't actually tried them.
Well, they have a free VDI, so we should definitely give that a try, especially with this upcoming project that we have. We'll have a chance to at least demo it and see if there's some value in further exploring it. Have you looked at this, or do you want to talk to this article, Dennis?
Well, no, I just came across this as I was going through my usual stuff yesterday, and I thought, oh, well, this is interesting, because, you know, desktop virtualization and application virtualization, I think, are kind of the next step in virtualizing things. It's difficult to access these things for testing because, you know, terminal services within Windows is pretty limiting. And some of the other VMware and Citrix solutions are very expensive, and you can only get access to them if you're a partner or whatever. So I just thought it was a good way for possibly people to try out desktop virtualization a little bit and see how it works for them.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, the good news I was talking about just earlier has to do with moving a large company from a standard Windows platform to a Linux platform. However, there are some Windows applications in use that will not necessarily run through Wine or are not necessarily web-enabled. And so one of the things that we're doing is leaving a Windows desktop or virtual machine available just in case when an application needs to be run. So having sort of that dual capability is absolutely key.
And that's the exact model that this company is looking at, is providing businesses with a way to maintain a couple of Windows desktops for the power users who need them, and then save money by putting everybody else onto a Linux desktop.
Yeah, thank you for this. We definitely need to talk to these guys. And Dennis, if you're interested in that project, I think, not that you don't have enough on your plate, but I definitely think we would like to have some of your involvement in this project as well.
And I believe we're going to talk about that later today.
That's right. That's right, exactly. So that concludes the articles that we wanted to talk today. We're going to keep our Nerdcast a little bit shorter in hopes that more folks will engage and download our Nerdcast and watch them or listen to them in audio form. Make sure you take a look at iwanttobeanerd.com. Apply. We'd love to have more nerds join our team worldwide. Being a nerd is just an incredible opportunity. John and I started the company more than 14 years ago and never looked back. It's an absolute thrill ride to be involved in technology in a way that it helps people drive up their pleasure, their productivity, and their profitability. And as long as we keep the focus on those three P's when we're with customers, not only are we providing value to them, but we have fun doing this in the process. So I want to thank our existing team members for being daring entrepreneurs. We met with Craig Heath yesterday. He's a nerd in Oakville, and he's, I think, tomorrow celebrating his one-year anniversary with us. And when he made the jump, he said, oh my goodness, I am so scared. I am so uncomfortable. But he made it, and he says it's the best decision he ever made. So he's very thrilled for having made that decision. Folks, I don't know if you have any concluding comments you want to share.
Well, I'm happy to be doing this from my new home office. And yes. The reason we don't hear Midnight the Security Dog outside barking is because he's laying here behind me. Let me see if I can get him to poke his head up a bit here. The video say. and when you see the video, you'll see why he's Midnight the Security Dog. He's all black. Unfortunately, he doesn't show up real well on the webcam. He's taking a nap.
No worries. You have to spray paint his teeth black if you want him to be a real threat.
That's right.
All right. Well, everybody, say goodbye and hope to see you again next time.
All
thanks,
right.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a great week.
Good stuff. Thanks a lot, guys.
It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd. We know the truth is out there, but we'd have to leave our room. We are the nerds in your neighborhood. Polyester's a fashion statement. But there's more room on the beach for you, 'cause we're locked in our basement. It's great to be a nerd. It's great to be a nerd. We like to wear colors that do not appear in nature. It's great to be a poorly dressed, fashionless, or tricking, role playing, 90 pounds, one without pasty skin, pumpkin, underfed genius. Yes, it's